Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. Tonight's author on tour is Muhammad Yunus, who discusses his new book, Creating a World Without Poverty, Social Business and the Future of Capitalism, published by Public Affairs. In the weeks to come, we have David and Nick Sheff, and many more. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
Good morning, everyone. On behalf of the Tattered Cover Bookstore, it is my pleasure to welcome you and to thank you for joining us on this frigid, snowy morning. Dr. Muhammad Yunus is the founder and managing director of Grameen Bank, and in 2006, they were awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. I could go on at length about Dr. Yunus, but his time is short and precious today because shortly he will be giving the keynote address at the Convention for the American Library Association. Suffice it to say, we are honored that Dr. Yunus is with us this morning. Would you please join me in welcoming him?
Thank you. Thank you. Well, thank you very much. I was looking at the road, and it's pretty empty. It's cold. I'm not used to this cold. And I thought nobody will be in the room. Who wants to get up and run through these roads to come here? I'm surprised to see all of you here. And good morning. And I'm very happy that I have a few minutes to talk about the kind of things we are going through, particularly in the context of this financial crisis. The issues that I raise become more important, to kind of look back what we have done so far in the world. Yeah. Because most of the things didn't work out for people who need it the most. And one of such thing that we focus on is the financial institution, way back in 1976. I was, my whole story began with the lending just about $27 to 42 people. And at that time, I was not challenging the financial institutions or anything, just simply solving a local problem. Few people borrowed from the loan sharks in the village next door to the university campus. And I was trying to delink those poor people from the loan sharks by giving this money from my pocket rather than leaving it to the loan sharks to give them. When I did that, there was a tremendous amount of excitement, happiness. So I wanted to continue doing more of it. So then I thought of going to the bank to link them up, because bank is right in the campus. So I said, why don't you lend the money to the poor people? But their answer was, it's impossible. Bank cannot lend money to the poor people. So that's how the whole story began, and I tried to convince the bank, but they remained unconvinced. For months, I tried that. Then I offered myself as a guarantor. I said, take me as a guarantor, and I'll sign all your papers. And you do it. That was not easy either, but finally, that one worked. They thought they will get rid of me by accepting this. Because it will never work, so I will not come back and ask for any money. But luckily for me, it worked. And I was very happy that it worked, and that gave me more excitement to go from village one to village two and village three and so on. So that was the beginning. But the bank was very reluctant. Then I thought maybe I should create a separate bank for the poor people. So the next stage is to campaign for that, to persuade the government to give me the license to do that. And finally, in 1983, we got the license, we became a bank. and we called it Grameen Bank or a village bank. And that's how we continued to expand. And we were amazed too that it continued to remain as solid, as financially sound as in the first day. Even today, after all these financial crises, global leaders of the banks just collapsing, the banks which are based on collateral, so every loan has a very strong collateral behind it. The lawyers made it sure that nothing goes wrong, and everything went wrong. We dared something back in 1976, lending money without collateral, without any lawyers, but continues, and continues very strong, not just shaky or something. All the tremor created in the United States, which is engulfing the whole world, couldn't touch the banks which are based on no collateral, who never used any lawyers in their work. Their repayments still stayed that way, near 100%. And the poor payback repayment rate is very high. So that's kind of a contrasting picture. So when we redesigned the financial system today, after we get through, not after, during this crisis period, because after you forget, so you have to design things when you're still in the crisis. Because when it's over, then you just, oof, it's over. So let's go back. Let's have fun. Just like the way before. And then another crisis will come. So this is the right time to redesign everything that we think went wrong. And in that redesigning, I'm kind of putting my point. I said, don't just keep the basic structure as it is and fix a little thing here and a little thing there. It needs fundamental change. And that one statement would be in the fundamental change, that it shouldn't be a banking for the privileged people. It should be banking for all people. Nobody should be denied access to banking anywhere in the world, because it has been demonstrated again and again through our work that you can lend money to anybody practically without any fear of losing that money. Not only we give loans to the poorest women in Bangladesh, we also give loans to beggars. And it works out very well. Then many of them gradually quit begging and becomes a salesperson selling door to door. We have right now, we started this about 4 years back. We have over 100,000 beggars in that program, which we started just to do a few experiments with few beggars. The idea is, as you go from door to door begging, asking for some charity, something to eat, would you carry some merchandise with you? Some cookies, some candies, and give people option. You want to give him something free, some food, something, or you want to buy something from me? People may choose one or the other, or choose both. Give you something in charity and buy something from you. This is much better than asking for charity all the time and become rejected from many doors. So you avoid those rejections, reduce the number of rejection by offering another option. And they liked it. And we thought maybe we'll have about 1,000 beggars in that program. We were wrong. It became such a popular thing. It became over 100,000 beggars. The point I was going to make, that more than 11,000 of the beggars today have completely quit their begging. They became very successful door-to-door salesperson and moving on with their business. And others are more or less part-time beggars because they are mixing, sometimes begging, sometimes selling. And they are very good in judging which house is good for begging and which one is good for selling. So I tell my colleagues that they didn't have to go to business school, they understand market segmentation. The loan is about $12, $15, that's where we begin. And with a $15 loan, if you can help a person to change his or her life from being a beggar to a dignified business person, why shouldn't we extend that money to them? We are not talking about giving $15 charity, a loan that you are giving. If we had given that $15 charity to all these 100,000 plus beggars, I wouldn't have a story to tell you, because they will still be beggars. Because they will be using that money to eat more or do something and forget about it and continue begging. Because the way we brought this idea to them challenged them, and they want to be on top of it. And they did. We told them this is a interest-free loan, so this money will never grow. If you took $15, it will remain $15. So you don't have to worry about it. Oh, my money is getting bigger. And then we told them that there is no maturity date for this loan, no time limit. So nobody can fault you telling you that you are a defaulter. You'll never be a defaulter, because there is no time limit. How can I be a defaulter? So they have every opportunity not to pay back. Because whenever you ask them, why aren't you paying back? So it's nice. We don't still have more time. But one catch did the trick. We said, if you pay this back, you can take more. And you can go as far as you want. That made them work. And they paid back, they took the second loan and the third loan. There are many, many now thousands who are in the second loan and the third loan and the fourth loan. So again, the point I was making that if you design it right, things can be completely different. People tell me, how do you design Grameen Bank? How did you come up with it? I was teaching in Boulder, so every time I come here, I talk about Boulder. I had such a good time. Every summer I will come in Boulder, Colorado, to teach a summer course in the Economics Institute in the University of Boulder, Colorado. So I remember those days. And so people wonder that maybe I have researched them or something somewhere. I said, no, we didn't research anything. We just saw the problem and we jumped into it. We didn't know anything about it. We didn't have a blueprint. We didn't have an idea. And sometimes I joke about it. I said, well, whenever we needed a rule, a procedure, how to do it, we just look at the conventional banks, how they do it. Once we figure out how they do it, we just do the opposite. And it works out mighty good. And that's what we do. We still do the same. They go to the rich, we go to the poor. They go to men, we go to women. They go to the city, we go to the village. They said people have to come to us to do business. We said, forget it. People should not come to the bank. Bank should go to the people. Today in Grameen Bank in Bangladesh, we have more than 7.5 million borrowers. 97% of them are women. When they join Grameen Bank, they are destitute women completely. Never touch money in their life or never handle money to do anything. So these are the women that we encourage them to join us. They don't have to come to our office to do business. We go to them at their doorstep. All our business is done at the doorstep of their borrowers. And our banking is done in a weekly basis. Every week you pay your installment, you put your savings, whatever tiny little savings you want to put in your own account. So within a week, we meet all these 7.5 million borrowers at their doorstep, no matter where they live. So we know them very well. They know us very well. And that's how our banking is done. And rain, shine. We don't have snow, but we have flood. Our work doesn't stop. We continue. In disaster time, we work extra hard. We close down the banking face of the institution. We become a humanitarian organization. And our job is to save people, save children, save, give them food, give them medicine, take care of them until time comes when they can go back home. And by that time, they have lost their animals, they lost their homestead. So our job is to start all over again, give them fresh loans, to build houses, best things. So it's not just you are a friend when they're doing fine, when you become turned into a real danger when they're in trouble. So they see us as a friend in their extreme needs, and we remain their friends that way. So one of the issues that I've been raising in the book is why poverty? Who creates this poverty? And I give my experiences and say, poverty is not created by the poor people. They are not the reason why they are poor. It is the system which creates poverty. So if you want to take care of poverty, we have to fix the system. Then nobody will be a poor person, because people are as good as anybody. Poor people are as good as anybody else. Very talented, very active, very energetic, hardworking. But they never get the benefit of their hard work. Somebody else takes it away. And I give the examples of institutions, how it went wrong, work against them. Banking is one. Never came near them. Even in the United States, there are millions of people who can't open a bank account. It's not their fault. People used to tell me, the banks were telling me that the poor people are not creditworthy. And today, we have shown all over the world, they are creditworthy. I think now I want to raise the question, who are creditworthy? Because all the banks that we created around us, all the big banks, have lots of examples now. With all the collateral and all the money, they can't pay back. So this is an institution. Another one I talk about is this concept of business. I said it's very funny that the only concept we have of business in the economic theory of capitalism is about making money. And the point I'm raising that human being is not a one-dimensional being. So the moment they come into economic world, suddenly they are interpreted as a one-dimensional being. All you do is make money. There's nothing else. But human beings, real human beings as we are multidimensional people. What about our other dimensions? Probably theoreticians will say, well, then you walk out of the business world, economic world, and become a philanthropist. Then how come we call this economics a social science if it cannot reflect me inside it? You're talking about, you take a piece out of me and create a theory and say, this is your theory of society. I cannot accept that. I said, I understand that people have lots of urges, lots of dimensions. One of them is accumulation for personal reason, self-centeredness or selfishness, if you want to call it, without meaning that it is bad. It's not bad. We want to have things for ourselves. But we also want to have things done for others too. This is part of us. We jump at other people's problem to help them to get out of that problem. This is a natural instinct for us, the selfless part of it. I said, what about the selfless part of us? Why can't it be inside the theory of economics? We have one concept of business, which is to make money. We can have another concept of business, to do something else for other people. So now I'm proposing separate kind of business calling social business, business to change the world. And this is a non-loss, non-dividend company for making impact in the society. And everybody said, no, people want money. I said, yeah, people want money, but people gave away money too. Not only hundreds of thousands or $100, $1,000 or $1,000,000, even $1,000,000,000 people give away. So it's part of human being. Why can't we transform it into a social business? In charity, you give money, it does the work, but it works only once. It never comes back to you. You can't repeat the same thing with the same money. But if you transform the whole thing into a social business, money recycles. You get more done. So that's all I'm suggesting. So it doesn't have to be stepping outside of economics. It's inside economics I can do that. So we created some of those companies as an example. And two companies that we did, one is a joint venture with Danone, Grameen Danone company, to produce yogurt, very special kind of yogurt, as a social business. This is to address the malnutrition situation of children in Bangladesh. There are millions of children in Bangladesh who are malnourished. So what we have done from this company, we put all the micronutrients which are missing in the children, put it into the yogurt, and made it so cheap that even poor children can afford to eat it. If a child eats 2 cups of this yogurt each week over a period of 8 to 9 months, they regain all the micronutrients and become a healthy child. And the whole idea of this business is to make impact on the health of the children, not making money for the investors. We are very clear, the investors are very clear, we'll never take any dividend out of this company. We can take back the investment money, but nothing beyond that. And we'll be asking our CEO at the end of the year, instead of asking them how much money we made, we'll be asking how many children got out of malnutrition. And how are you planning for the next year? How many children you see next year coming out of malnutrition? So the basic question is different. So if you can do that, we can address this healthcare, address housing, address any problem we see around ourselves can be designed as a social business. And then we can start with this social business. If it works, you develop the seed. All you have to do now is to multiply the seed. No matter how big the problem is, it can be solved now because you develop the seed to address that particular problem in a business way. So that's the idea of social business. I said, today's capitalist system is a half-done system because it takes away other half. It doesn't include the other half. So I said, why didn't you include that other half? And worse come to worse, nobody will do that, but at least there'll be a door if anybody wants to take the door, and they will take it. Yes, I would like to get involved in the social business. So that's how I put the titles as social business and the future of capitalism, how we want to design it. So today's crisis gives us an opportunity. The bigger the crisis, bigger the opportunity to address more fundamental issues. So I hope people will pay attention to it, see how far we can go. Thank you very much.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fode, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Stay pod-tuned in the coming weeks for David and Nick Sheff and many more as we podcast Authors on Tour. This podcast was originally recorded on January 25th, 2009.